Thanks again for the opportunity to speak and to speak from the distance this time. So what I wanted to tell you about is some work in progress in categorified shift theory and how you can use it to better understand the relationship between geometric Langmuir and topological field theory. So I'll start there. So I'll start by reminding you a little bit about geometric Langmuir. So here's the setup. We'll work over a field algebraically closed of characteristic zero, and we'll take C to be a smooth and proper curve and over K, and G a reductive group with Langmuir dual group G check. So you can always think G is GLN and G check is also GLN. That will be perfectly good for us. And so here's a rough statement of geometric Langmuir. Geometric Langmuir tells you that you expect a certain equivalence between two categories. One is called the automorphic category, one is called the spectral category. So on the automorphic side, you have a category of D modules on a certain moduli. This moduli band G is a moduli of G bundles on the curve. So for GLN, we are talking about D modules on the moduli of rank N vector bundles. And here on the spectral side, we have a category of quasi-coherent shifts on a moduli of local systems for the dual group. So for GLN, again, we are talking about the moduli here of rank N vector bundles with a flat connection. And so what geometric Langmuir tells us is that these two things should be very closely related. That's this squiggly equal sign in the middle. I will explain later on what with more precision what this thing means, but for now it will be enough for us to know that we predict that these two things should be very, very close to each other. Great, so here's the jumping point for this talk. So so this is an observation by Capucine and Witten that geometric Langmuir should fit into an equivalence of four-dimensional topological field theories. And so somehow this statement up here should perhaps arise. There should be a deeper statement, an equivalence of 4D TQFTs, that perhaps reduces to this one up here, perhaps after reduction on C, if we think about C, if it were over the complex number C is a two-dimensional surface. Great, so that's the physical input. And I'll add one more word to this phrase, which is that nowadays perhaps we say that Betti geometric Langmuir is what fits into 4D TQFT. So what I wrote up here is a form of the RAM geometric Langmuir and is perhaps something that is really part of conformal field theory. But there's a close cousin to this statement. That's this Betti version, which was introduced by these people, by Bensby and Nadler. And it's a very similar statement, but it has more of a chance of being part of topological field theory. So this is perhaps a more accurate phrase than the one we had before. Okay, so I'll tell you what Betti Langmuir is later on, but for now, just imagine it's very close to this. We changed just a little bit the categories on both sides. And so what I want to do in this talk is to try to at least partially answer the following question. The question is, what are these field theories? And of course, there's some flavors of answers that I guess people on your side already know. So even Capucine and Witten told us one flavor of an answer. So you can say words like A and B twists of 4D n equals 4 super EN meals. But that's not the kind of answer I'm looking for. Okay, so the kind of answer I'm looking for is the answer that will perhaps satisfy a mathematician, which is a mathematician for if you ask a mathematician what is a 4D TQFT, they will tell you that it's a functor out of a category of cobordisms, and that's not the kind of data that was produced by Capucine and Witten. Great, so perhaps to make this a little bit more precise, this is a better version of this question. So what we are really, really looking for is what the three categories of boundary conditions are for these theories. So being four-dimensional theories, they should have some three categories of boundary conditions. And now this is the kind of data that you can go and give it to a mathematician, and they will be able to reconstruct, at least in principle, the whole theory out of it. So thanks to results like the cobordism hypothesis. So that's my goal. In this talk, I want to tell you one possible answer that you can give to this question for the spectral theory. Okay, so there will be a three-category of boundary conditions for the automorphic theory. There will be a three-category of boundary conditions for the spectral theory. I'm not going to tell you too much about the automorphic one, but I hope to explain to you one way in which you can access the spectral theory. Okay, so that's the background. So let's get started. So we want to produce three categories, and that's a complicated piece of data. So how are we going to do it? We're going to produce it by a process that I like to call linearization, and I'm going to explain to you how that goes by a series of more and more sophisticated examples. So here's the most basic case of linearization. We will take X to be a set. And we will consider the vector space of functions on X. This is O of X. That's a vector space, so I can imagine that I can produce like 1D TQFT out of it with space of states O of X. Right. So that's what I call by linearization of X. Okay. So I produce a TQFT by taking functions on X. Now you are allowed to ask me what is the value on a one-dimensional manifold, since this is a 1D TQFT. And the answer is that, the one-dimensional manifold that I know is the circle, and the number that this theory assigns to a circle, the partition function, is the dimension of this vector space, which is the cardinality of X. Okay, so here we see a phenomenon that it's actually going to be there through the whole talk, that the numbers can be infinity in these theories. So I didn't say anything about the set. The set could be infinite. And this number, this value could diverge, and that's fine. So I'm still going to call this a 1D TQFT, even though I have this problem. Perhaps for a mathematician, this will be really a 0D TQFT because it doesn't do anything to a circle. But I'll keep on using this convention that this wants to be really a 1D TQFT. Great. So that's linearization in the 1D case. Let's go one level higher. Let's do a let's build a two-dimensional theory, and now we can start bringing in geometry. So X is going to be an object of algebraic geometry, so it can be a variety, scheme, stack. For concreteness, let's say just scheme, and we'll work with quasi-coefects. This is the category of quasi-coherent sheaves on X, which we will really be thinking about the DG category. So implicit in here will be a D. So this is really what you can call D quasi-co, but I won't be putting it into the notation. Yeah, so being a one-dimensional, being a one category, I can think about it as the boundary conditions for a 2D theory. I'm going to call the theory chi again. And this is what you will know as the B model of X. This is one version of the boundary conditions for the B model. Okay, so now, great, we've got a 2D theory. We could ask what are the values of the theory on surfaces, which again, they may give me infinity, so I'm going to ignore them. But what I really want to focus on is what this does to a circle. So I'm going to take my 2D theory, reduce it on a one-dimensional manifold S1. I'm supposed to get out a 1D theory, which has a vector space of boundary conditions. This vector space happens to be the Hochschild chains of my category. So in the same way that quasi-coefects really meant a DG category, vector space really means DG vector space in this talk. So I'm giving you here a chain complex that arises from reducing your theory on S1. Great. So that's a general fact. Out of any category, you will see this result. Now, in our situation, we will have a geometric interpretation for this chain complex in terms of an algebra of functions on a certain geometric object. This mapping space is the what's called the derived loop space of X. Okay, so in the same way that categories are derived and vector spaces are derived, schemes may also be derived in this talk. And the input, the only input that we need really from derived geometry is that this is an operation that makes sense. There is a given a scheme and a topological space, there is a derived scheme classifying maps between them. So now I should say the kind of maps that we are considering here are locally constant maps. So this S1 doesn't really make it too far around X. It's it would really, at the level of a classical scheme, this mapping space is just X itself. But it has some interesting derived structure having to do with the fact that S1 is not really contractible. So, and again, so thinking in terms of the physics, perhaps this is parallel to the fact that B model type invariants localize in locally constant maps. That's what we are seeing here. Great. So in the case of S1, we can understand this thing a little bit more in more concrete terms. So let me say that. So this derived mapping space arises also as the intersection of X with itself inside X times X. So the self-intersection of the diagonal. And again, the self-intersection of the diagonal is just X, but it has some derived fuzz keeping track of the non-transversality. And in the case of affine X, you can compute this just as a spectrum of the tensor product of the diagonal bimodule with itself over O of X tensor O of X. So, so this is to relate these two descriptions that I gave you of the value of the theory on a circle. This may be familiar to you from this is sort of the usual way that people define Hochschild chains. Good. So so that's our two-dimensional theory that we can cook out of a scheme. So we want to get to four-dimensional theories for geometric Langlands. So this won't be enough, but you can imagine that we can do this in higher categorical levels. So in our first example, what we did is we took X and we took functions on X with values in numbers. On our second example, we took functions on X with values in vector spaces, in other words, sheaves on X with values in vector spaces. Now we want to go higher, so we will take sheaves on X with values in categories. Okay, and that takes us to the second part of my title. We will have to go into categorified sheave theory to get higher dimensional theories. Okay, so let me tell you a definition. So what is a sheaf of categories on a scheme? So this will be quasi-coherent sheaves of categories. And what is this? It's a sheaf of categories will be just a DG category acted on by the monoidal category quasi-co of X. Okay, so the way to think about this definition is that one level down, if I wanted to define for you what is a quasi-coherent sheaf of vector spaces, and you imagine that I was working with an affine scheme for a moment, then I could say that a quasi-coherent sheaf of vector spaces is a vector space with an action of O of X. So now I'm just replacing the words vector space with DG category, I'm replacing O of X with quasi-co of X, and that's the definition one level up. Great, so let me give you a few examples that you can keep in mind through the talk. So the most basic one, quasi-co of X acts on itself. This is the categorified structure sheaf. If you take a point in your scheme, then you can find an action of quasi-co of X on the category of vector spaces in the following way. If you give me a sheaf F and the vector space V, you can pull back the sheaf to the point, so take the fiber and tensor with V. Okay, this is what you could call a skyscraper shift. So I put a copy of vector spaces in the point X, and I put zero everywhere else. And well, generalizing these two examples, we have geometric examples. If you have a scheme over X, you get an action of quasi-co of X and quasi-co of Y by basically the same thing that happened in the second example. You can pull back a shift from X to Y and tensor over Y to get an action. So these are geometric examples. They are a very rich source, and they will be enough for us today. Okay, great. So that's what a shift catalyst is. And now let me tell you about the 3DB model. So we will consider the collection of all shift of categories. So the collection of all modules over quasi-co. That thing I'm going to call two quasi-co. And in the same way that one quasi-co is a one category, this thing is a two category. And therefore we can use it to define a 3D TQFT. This is one version of the three-dimensional B model of X. So now you can ask what happens if I reduce it on a circle, for example. Taking a 3D theory, reducing on a circle, I get a 2D theory, which has a category of boundary conditions. And this category of boundary conditions is very similar to what happened in the case of the 2DB model. So I will see the loop space of my scheme, but now linearized in a different way. I won't take O anymore. I will now take quasi-co of this loop space. In the same way, if you ask me what happens if I consider, if I evaluate my theory on a surface sigma, well, I'm going to see the mapping space from sigma to X, and it's going to be linearized by taking functions now because I want to get a vector space out of it. Great, so that's a 3DB model. And
Is this framed? I don't know where I should ask this to. Is this a framed TFT or is it oriented?
Yeah, so it just so happens that it's really, I think it's even unoriented. So no framings are important. If you had like a lot of finiteness conditions for two quasi-co and you really wanted to go all the way to numbers, then at the very last levels, you will perhaps need some sort of framing, you know, to distinguish perhaps functions here from distributions here. But since I'm only going all the way to dimension n minus one, and I only want vector spaces out of my theory, I don't need framings at all. I can choose to do unframed manifolds.
And that's for X a scheme or?
Yeah, so X can be a bit more general than a scheme in this whole situation. We will use all these for stacks as well. You have to, if the stack is very nasty, you may run into problems here, but most stacks that you will run into, you will still be able to compute these invariants in the same way.
Is there an easy statement of the obstruction?
The obstruction for what?
For framing, like what could go wrong? What should I be checking?
Yes, so I wouldn't say that the obstruction, when you pass two stacks, I'm not sure where I would say that the obstruction is with the existence of a framing. What I would say is there could be problems with finiteness conditions, perhaps suddenly, you could perhaps fail to be. I could imagine for a very nasty stack, you could fail to be dualizable, for example, and then you don't know even what to assign to a circle.
Right.
But if you restrict to nice enough stacks, you have a lot of dualizability properties, and then I think for in those cases you're just going to be unframed.
In the Schwick case, isn't the obstruction to framing the set of one?
Like
so with
the trivializable structure.
Yes.
What's that? Trivialization of the set.
Yeah. Right. So in the 2D case, it's like a Calabi-Yau structure. So you might think, oh, it's like a Calabi-Yau structure on the loop space, even just to get SO2 framing. or SO2 invariant.
Yeah, so I think that happens when you, so the Calabi.
Maybe it is always Calabi L.
The Calabi-Yau structure, so when you go back to the 2D case, remember, the Calabi-Yau structure, I think, comes into play if you want to actually see this as a, perhaps a 2D TQFT, where you really actually extend to two-dimensional manifolds. Here, I'm extending only to one-dimensional manifolds. And the only claim that I'm making here for Quasico in the two-dimensional case is that that it's dualizable. This is being a dualizable thing, it defines a 1D theory at the very least, and that this is the value of that 1D theory on the circle. So
I think
so
even,
if you,
even for S1 though, like I'm sorry to give you a hard time about this. I'm asking because I actually really want to know and I don't know the answer. So that you know it's actually a good intention question. But here there are two framings on the circle, and it's like the difference between homology and Hochschild homology and cohomology.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So that's not, so if you actually want to get like full 2D, that second, the framings on the circle, you will only, it will be relevant if you actually are thinking about this as a 2D TQFT. Okay. So again, I'm kind of, when I say the word 2D TQFT here, perhaps I mean 1D TQFT. And you're correct that there's issues with framing if you actually mean 2D TQFT here, but perhaps I don't want to make it into a full group to this theory.
That's fine. Okay, thanks. Right. Thanks.
Great. So back to the so these things are fine up to surfaces. Up to surfaces you can get these results. Let's go. So and now you can imagine, okay, let's just repeat what we did for n dimensional theories. Okay, so we'll just define now n Quasico to be the n category of n minus one categories with an action of n minus one Quasico. Okay, so we are repeating the previous slide, and but it's an inductive definition. Okay, so we had Quasico before we took modules over Quasico. Now When you have two Quasico, you take modules and you get three Quasico and so on. And I should say there's serious technical issues to make. Okay, you have to at some point make precise what you mean by n minus one category. It can be done, but I'm just not going to emphasize it too much in the talk. I'll just say these are some kind of DG n minus one categories. So they have chain complexes at the very last level. And moreover, they are co-complete. So everything inside will have co-limits in this talk. That's the other kind of thing that perhaps you should want to know. And we can use it again as the boundary conditions for n plus one dimensional theory, where again, just like before, I just mean perhaps n dimensional theory in a mathematical way. And this thing has values on manifolds up to dimension n. And what you see out of a manifold of dimension j is the mapping space linearized in the appropriate way. So linearization computes through mapping spaces. That's the slogan. And now we can cook up n-dimensional theories for all n, starting with algebraic geometric objects. So we are in good shape, and now we'll go back to Langlands and see what we can do with this. Okay, so back to Betti geometric Langlands. Now I'll tell you actually what Betti geometric Langlands looks like. So the field will now be C. So for this slide, I'll need to use analytic topology, so I'll work over the complex numbers. And here's a statement of global Betti Langlands. So after what you expect after reduction on C, which is a two-dimensional surface. So on the automorphic side, we still see the module of G bundles, but now I won't take D modules. I'll take this other thing, constructible shifts, so a topological version of D modules, And there has to be a support condition here. There's a singular support, an important singular support. So you don't want all constructible shifts, only some of them. And that's what you see on the automorphic side. So I'm not going to be using this category for too much. So I'll just leave it like that. This is what you see. On the spectral side, on the other hand, you still see quasi-code, but now you see this loxis Betty. So I just added this Betty word to the moduli. So in the same way, so remember before I told you that loxis meant bundles with a flat connection. Now this just honestly means locally constant shifts on the analytic topology for C. So if you like, this is roughly like same representations of pi 1 of C. So up to base point and some derived fuzz, this is basically just representations of pi 1. Great. So and you will know from Riemann-Hilbert that, the modules, I mean, shifts with connections and local systems are, well, shifts with flat connections and local systems are pretty much the same under Riemann-Hilbert, but that's only an equivalence of analytic structures. So this thing is honestly a different algebraic stack from the one that we had before. And quasi-code knows about the algebraic structure. So this whole thing is different, actually different from the category that we had before. Great, so that's Betty geometric lengthens. And again, we have this squiggly equal signs that I will explain later. But what I'll add here is now I'll fill in this picture with some extra information from the TQFT. So fairly local Langlands is what I will call a statement at the level of boundary conditions. So a automorphic three category is roughly this, well, should be close to a spectral three category. After reduction on a circle, I should see an automorphic two category having a spectral incarnation as well. So I'm not going to say much about these things, the automorphic side on the general case. Perhaps we do know who the automorphic two category is, but I will leave it a mystery. What I want to focus on is on the right-hand side. Okay, so what I've told you on the last slides, we will be able to guess who to put here. So who do we want to put for the spectral three category? Okay, so let's take a look at this this global stuff, quasi-code of loxis Betty. So there's a classic. The key thing here is that there's a classifying space for local systems, which is just BG check. A local system is just a map from C into BG check. And now, based on the patterns that I've told you about before, you can imagine that on the spectral three category, perhaps we will want to put three quasi-code BG check. This is a thing that, after reduction on the surface sigma, gives us back this quasi-code of loxis. And on S1, we will put local systems on the circle, which just give me g-check mod g-check. There's a monogamy g-check. After you pick, you basically trivialize at a point the new quotient by this trivialization. This is an adjoint quotient, and this is the picture that you expect on the spectral side. Right, so let me tell you a case in which you can actually make this whole picture very precise, and there's actually a theorem. So in the abelian case, we sort of understand everything. So the automorphic category actually has a name, it's 3-log of BT. 3-log means, in the same way that three quasi-code was shifts of two categories, quasi-coherent shifts of two categories, this is local systems of two categories on BT. And it actually is equal, not squiggly, but equal to three quasi-code of BT check. So that's fully local abelian Langlands. And in contrast with what happens if you go to global abelian Langlands, this is a kind of formal statement. So there's basically no geometry whatsoever in this statement. And as soon as you prove enough properties about your shift theories, you can just deduce this quite quickly. So in fact, the proof is so pleasant that I want to share the idea with you. So the idea of the proof is that this is a statement in categorified Fourier theory. So we will start with something that it will perhaps be familiar, perhaps not phrased in this way, but most of you will have seen a statement equivalent to this. So this right-hand side thing, quasi-co of BT-check, is just representations of T-check, of T-check. Okay, so, and representations of a torus, well, they split into characters, and characters of T-check are co-characters for for T, and that's what we are seeing on the left-hand side. This lambda T is the co-character lattice for T, and I put log of this, which means this is a discrete set, so I basically mean just vector spaces parametrized by co-characters. So this equivalence here just means a representation of BG check, which is a vector space parametrized by a family of vector spaces parametrized by characters. And I've added monoidal structures here. Tensor product of representation corresponds to convolution of in this lambda T. Right, so that's a sort of, I don't know, one Fourier transform or two Fourier transform, I don't know what number to assign to it. And now the proof of this Langland statement will be just taking modules over this this is an equivalence of monoidal categories, symmetric monoidal categories. I'll take modules twice and we'll get this statement. So after I take modules once, on the right-hand side, remember modules over quasi-co is just two quasi-co. And on the left-hand side, it so happens that when you take modules over a group algebra, you descend to the classifying space. And the classifying space of lambda T is, well, topologically, is just T. And this thing only knows about the topology, the homotopy type. Okay, and we'll play the same game again. So will you go one level higher? Modules over two quasi-co gives you three quasi-co. And on the left side, again, you go to the classifying space because you're taking modules over a group algebra, and you've gotten your Langlands, your abelian Langlands type statements out of this. Right, so that's a story for T at torus, and it's the only case in which we can actually prove really a theorem. In the rest of the talk, I will just basically be speaking about the spectral side. So what I plan to do next is to tell you what happens to other groups. Okay, and this is when problems start arising. The problem is this squiggly equal sign that I've been writing is not an equal sign when you move beyond abelian groups. And you can imagine that, well, if this is not an equal sign already, then whatever you wanted to do for the local case, it's not going to work. So we could admit defeat or try to fix this, and we will try to fix this. So the fix to this problem was given his famous work of Arinkin and Gaiskori. They tell us that perhaps we have to modify the spectral site to make this thing into an equivalence. They do it in the context of the Rahn Langlands, but you can do it in Betti Langlands as well. And the better conjecture is to say that the automorphic side is perhaps equal, or this is the conjecture still, but now it passes some sanity checks at least, is equal to something called inco n of the Betti module. So I'm going to explain what this inco n is later on, but what I want to point out now is that it shouldn't take too much thought to come up with the following idea, that if before you thought that you wanted to do three quasi code, well, now perhaps you want to do something called three in code VGCheck, and for local languages, two in code n of GCheck mod GCheck. So whatever these objects are, they surely should help us in fully local and local very geometric lanlands. And what I hope to do in this talk is to tell you one possible way in which you can define these things. So let's go, and we'll go step by step. So I'll begin by telling you first.
So is this better conjecture? Is this our final form of the Betty-Langlands conjecture? Is this the actual one?
As far as I know, it's the current form. So it's what appears in the Betty-Langlands paper. Yes, so I don't think anybody has claimed any reason why this shouldn't be true. But also we don't have a proof either. So yes. Great. So thanks for the question. So we'll go now towards this three encode n, and we'll go step by step. So I'll drop this n first, and I'll tell you about inco and two inco and three inco. Okay, so what is inco? And the first thing to say is that inco is a shift theory. Okay, so it's a machine that takes schemes and outputs categories of incoherent shifts. And what is this? Well, this is the definition, and it may look a little bit silly. So intco is intco. So I'll explain. So this co is what you will know as dbco, okay, the derived category, bounded derived category of coherent shifts. And this int means just add co-limits to it. So remember our rule that all categories have to have co-limits. Well, I can take an infinite direct sum of coherent shifts, it's no longer coherent. So I'll just add co-limits to it and to just formally add infinite direct sums. But in your mind, really, if you understand dbco, you can imagine that intco has really the same information. Great, so this is actually a purely derived phenomenon. There's no really an analog of intco in the abelian case. For the abelian case, really, you have quasi-co and not much more. But when you pass to the derived categories, you have this thing, and it's actually different from quasi-co. So quasi-co has a similar description from the one up here, but it's an incompletion of the category of perfect complexes. So which means finite complexes of vector bundles. And now you will see that, well, a vector bundle is a coherent shift, but not every coherent shift has a finite resolution in terms of vector bundles. So these two things are slightly different, at least in the case where X is singular. So when X is singular, quasi-coherent shifts are examples of incoherent shifts, but the contention is strict. So the way to think about this slide is we are now entering perhaps the realm of functional analysis. And what this is saying is that when X is a singular scheme, you really have choices for the functional analysis of your categories of shifts. You have the naive category of shifts, quasi-co, that everybody knows and loves. But there's a different one, which is inco, which is very close to it, but not quite the same. And the reason this helps in Betty-Langlands is that, let's go back one slide. In Betty-Langlands, we want to do shifts on these moduli of Betty local systems. And this moduli is singular. So we actually had choices for the functional analysis. And it so turned out that the naive one was just wrong. So we had to do something better. This inco n will be something in the middle between quasi-co and intco. So not only you have this contention, but you have a whole family of things in the middle usually. Great, so now we want to go higher. So we want to take this and categorify it. And the problem here is that in contrast with QuasiCo, there's not really a clear way to take this description and categorify it. So you may be able to deal with int, but it's not clear how to categorify Co. There's no really a very obvious candidate in principle. So we'll do something different to categorify int Co. And that's the following. So the way we are going to define an int Co is basically by thinking about what properties do we want it to have. And we will think about it as in terms of shift theory. So I'm not only going to think about, say, two in Co of X, but I want to think about it how it relates to two in Co of Y for other choices of Y. So let me tell you first. A little comparison between QuasiCo and INCO as shift theories. So every time that you have a map between schemes, you can pull back and push forward quasi-coherent shifts. And it turns out you can also pull back and push forward incoherent shifts. And there's just slightly different notation that people use because the attention properties are slightly different. But what I want to focus on is that basically one very important property of QuasiCo is that if you can play the following game. If you take k, sort of as the structure shift of a point, so now pi will be the projection to the point, I'll take k, I'll pull back to x, so I get the structure shift of x, I take global sections, this is pi lower star, I get, well, global sections of a structure shift, which is functions on x. So you can play a similar game with INCO, but you get a different answer. So if you pull back k, push forward to the point, you don't get functions, you get distributions on x. So one way to think about the difference between QuasiCo and INCO is that QuasiCo works very well. It's very well adapted to working with functions. INCO is very well adapted to working with distributions. And now we'll just take this chart and move it one level up. So whatever 2 INCO is, we'll guess its properties before defining it. So let me first tell you what we know for 2 QuasiCo. So shifts of categories have pullbacks and push forwards. And I can pull back vect, not k now, but vect from the point and push forward, and I will get QuasiCo of x. Okay, see how this just categorified what happened in the previous chart. So now I hope you will believe me that it's reasonable to expect that whatever 2 INCO is, it will have similar properties. So I should be able to have a pullback push forward. And if I pull push back, I won't get QuasiCo perhaps, but I will get INCO. Right. So my claim is that you can take this chart home with perhaps a little bit more information about the attentions between these pullbacks and push forwards, and you can guess the definition of 2 INCO. So I'm going to tell you basically the universal object which has these properties. So let's do it. So X is going to be a finite type scheme, and I'm going to define the two category 2 INCO of X. So we will have it will be generated by some data. So it will have some objects and it will have some morphisms. So what objects can we guess? Based on the previous slide, what objects can we guess that we should have on 2 INCO? At the very least, I should have this thing over here. So I should be able to take vect, sort of as something belonging to the point, and I should be able to push forward to push forward this object to X. That's a thing that I'm going to call quotes in co of X. So it's basically the structure shift, but the categorified structure shift, but of 2 in co of X. And the reason I give it this name is because when I take global sections of it, I expect to recover the category of incoherent shifts. Great, so we certainly should have this object. And we can do even better. So if I have some scheme over X, you should also be able to take its own structure shift and push forward it to X. And I'm still going to call it quotes in Co of Y, because this is still a thing in Turing Co of X, whose global sections recover in Co of Y. Right. And this is all. Okay, so whatever Turing Co of X is, if you believe in shift theory and you believe that there should be pullbacks and push forwards relating different different schemes, this is everything that you're going to cook up. Okay, you're not going to be able to move away from these objects. So we'll just declare that this is everything there is, and up to just making building things out of collimates of this. Right. So these are the generators, and I should tell you a category of morphisms between a pair of such things. It takes a little bit more thought to guess what it is, but I'll just say that if you take two of these generators, what you see is a category of incoherent shifts on the fiber product of these two geometric things over X. So I'll just mention very quickly that, this is a very complicated two category. It has infinitely many generators. There's no easy way around it. It's complicated. It turns out you can consider different. So you can get around just with Ys, which are smooth globally and proper over X, using those objects, you can get a description of Turing Co in terms of a union of categories of modules. Basically, by Morita theory, if you fix one generator of your category, the subcategory generated by this is modules over a monoidal category. So you can take the point of view that Turing Co of X is just a giant union of modules over monoidal categories. And so I should say that this definition is basically this point of view on Turing Co has already been proposed by Arinkin and Gaiskori. They've been giving talks on Turing Co for a while using this point of view, and it turns out to be equivalent to what I'm suggesting up here. Right. So
can I ask another question?
Yeah, sure.
Is there a left adjoint to pull back in two INTCO or something? Is that
So that's the magic of working in the categorified context. So since, remember, we are working, here's the key thing. I told you at some point everything was a co-complete category, and it turns out that it's very easy to be dualizable in co-complete categories. So essentially, the fact that most things are dualizable means that pullback and push forwards are adjoints to each other on both sides. So, and that's true for two quasi co, and it's true for two int co. So you have both adjoints really.
And they're the same functor. They're on. That's the statement.
Sorry.
Like when you say they're adjoints on both sides, you just have two functors.
There's pullback and there's push forward, and they are both left and right adjoints of each other.
Sorry. So like a lot of work is being done by the word generated by, like in particular, like there's like, you know, if you just have like an infinity one category or a stable infinity one category, there's a good theory of generation. But like, what is like the theory of generation for infinity two categories?
Yeah. So
the majority of the work.
Yeah. So I should say, when I say two category here, I'm thinking mostly in terms of enriched categories. And so I'm thinking about this as a category enriched in DG categories. And what I mean by generation is basically the same thing that you know. So what did generation mean in one categories? It meant that the Hom functor is conservative. So one way to phrase it is that the Hom functor is conservative. And here's the same business. You can say that the...
Yeah, but you have to have a category first. you have a category that doesn't exist, and now you are trying to like.
Yeah. So yeah, you're asking about the process of generate. Yeah. So that I tell you what it means to have a generator. You're asking about the process of. Yes. So here's. Okay. So it's basically a Yoneda So what I've told you, this data that I've told you down here is a honest two-category, so a linear two-category, but it's not co-complete. So it's basically just a collection of objects and home categories between them. And you, what you do, this generated by means just take the Yoneda completion of this in the enriched world. So one way to say it is, I don't know, this thing defines basically an algebraoid. So it's like a many object monoidal category, and you just take modules over this many object monoidal category.
Right. I mean, this sort of brings me back around to a question I had in the Sorinkin and Gatescore story. Like, do they not incorporate any interaction between two different smooth Ys?
No, yes. So I'm being sloppy here with what I mean by union. So they, okay, so in their story, they talk about the bimodules relating to different Ys, and those bimodules are what you see up here.
They're taking the union of the Ys and then taking the fiber product of the unions.
Yeah, so I think that's one way to, I think that's one way to make this
so
more precise.
So is that different from what you're saying? Like, is the sort of difference between what you're doing in Arinkin Gatescore just this sort of smooth and proper?
Yeah, so essentially, I mean, it's just those two claims. So first of all, you can this is sort of the point of view of you can phrase it in terms of modules over convolution categories and modules over or just like honestly two categories. And yeah, so the generators, I'm just adding a few generators which make the functoriality a little bit more clear. Okay, so when you want to pull back one of these generators, suddenly it will stop being smooth over K. So it pays to it's convenient to add it, but those two things are the only difference really.
Okay. Right. And then this thing is like closed under, or is there like a notion of localization sequence, like in this two category? Like, you know, like for ordinary, like the ordinary category of like stable infinity categories, you have some notion of like a triangle of.
Sure, you could phrase, I mean, you could do the same definition. So you just, a triple of, so two composed of arrows with the corresponding adjoints. And so that's some sequence of units or co-units give you an exact sequence in a certain, there's you can run the same definition really for any two category.
Okay, I see.
Great. I mean, the easiest thing will be to say, I mean, you can always talk about co-fibers in this. This is a pointed thing, and you can talk about co-fibers, and that gives you exact sequences as well.
And is there some sort of like different notion of generation when you like also allow you yourself to build things up using co-fiber sequences?
When I allow myself, okay, there, I don't know, perhaps your one thing to say is the generation, one way to phrase the generation is in terms of adding co-limits, and perhaps that's one thing you will be adding. So if you had a map between two of these generators, there's certainly one thing that you should be adding is the co-fiber of them. Now, I don't think that's enough. So, I don't know a short list of co-limits that you can say I just add those, and that's what generation means. Okay, so in the state one level down, for if you want to generate a stable category, basically you add finite co-limits and you add you split that importance, and that's if you want the compact objects, I guess. I guess here the thing I wanted to point out is that what you're asking about localization sequences and so on is part of the things that really come for free, and but they're
so
not clear exactly.
That's the only of the co-limits that you need to add.
Sorry?
Yeah, okay, so there's just not a list of the co-limits that you need to add.
Yeah, so I was mixing two things in this explanation. So we don't really care about anything like compact objects or anything. So the co-limits really in this big world, that you are adding is really just weighted colimits. So basically, in the world of enriched categories, what the Yoneda completion is, it's just basically the free thing on your category which has all weighted colimits. So you should, there's two things that you should be able to do. You should be able to take colimits over just ordinary one categorical diagrams, but you should also be able to tensor by objects in your enriched category. So certainly you see here an object which is quotes in co of y. Take your favorite DG category, you should be adding an object here, which is, if your category was C, you should be able to add here C tensor quotes in co of y.
Okay.
Now, the reason I'm not phrasing it that way, because weighted colimits in an enriched category, infinity category theory, are not there yet. So I mean, that's what should be true, but we don't quite have a precise statement along the lines of this story with the colimits.
Can I ask one kind of related question? Are you good though?
If you want to.
In either two quasi-co or two int-co, are there are there excision exact sequences? Like if I have a complementary closed and open, and I want to study the objects int-co z and int-co u, and
that's right. Yes. So you're saying I can take three of these things, an open, a complement of an open, and the whole thing, and they fit into an exact sequence. And basically, the reason that's true, it's just because it happens after humming with every other generator. So to prove a thing internal to twin co, you really have to prove it after pullbacking to any scheme over X. And the fact that you have those exact sequences of incoherent shifts, of honest incoherent shifts, lets you prove it internal to twin co. And for two quasi-co, it's even easier. So for two quasi-co, the normal exact sequence that you knew for quasi-co just is internal to quasi-co.
I somehow had the impression that something could go wrong doing that, but you're saying it just works in general?
I believe it does.
That's good news. Okay. One other thing, so you're going to later kind of extend this to a bigger class of spaces than just finite type schemes, I guess. Are you going to say that later or?
I'll just want to extend it to stacks. Okay, so I don't want to move beyond finite type. Int-co really works best, even int-co works best for finite type. I'll just want to send to stacks, and you can prove that this thing has some good descent properties, so it's a reasonable theory to use in stacks.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for all the questions. Right. So can you remind me how much do I have left? Zero.
Yeah, roughly zero.
Okay. So let's.
Leave, they can leave. So don't feel like you have to finish like absolutely now. But maybe try to.
Yeah. So I'll try to do. We'll skip some things. So one of the features of moving the talk to a slide talk is that I wasn't quite sure how long it will take now. So. Let me skip forward and I'll just tell you a few things. So I want to leave you with, the fact that you can run this for n int co. Really, this theory is interesting for n equals 1, 2, 3. I'm not really getting too crazy with it. And in the same way that I told you about this DQFT associated to and quasi-co, you can get a TQFT associated to anint-co, but you have to be careful. So you don't quite have to think about anint-co as a n category. You have to think about it as an object in n plus one int-co of the point for the integrals to work. But after you take care with that, then the integrals work out. I think there's been several talks on Rosensky-Witten theory in that seminar lately. So I want to just point out that in the case n equals two, this quotes two in co gives you the boundary conditions for a theory which has the same invariant as that you expect from Rosensky-Witten theory of T star X. So you see on the circle and on S2, quasi co and O of T star X. So that's something quite suggestive, but still a lot remains to be done for two in co before you want to really say that it's actually perhaps Rosensky-Witten. I'll jump ahead to, so let me just point out that, okay, I've told you half of what I promised to tell you. I told you about three in co and two in co. Modulo asking you to believe me that you can extend to stacks. You can plug in BG check and G check, Mochi check here, and you have these things. And I'll tell you the slogan of what this N means. So the key observation is that that N in co is a categorified D modulo on X. So there are some objects like differential operators on X and that act on N in co, and therefore things acting on by differential operators, shiftify over cotangent bundles, and that's what you're seeing here. Okay, this N is an appropriate subset of the cotangent bundle of these spaces, and what you're doing here is restricting to that subset. And I'm not going to, let me just say, perhaps there's a very nice one way to think about this categorified D-module structure is that when you look at the theory defined by N in co, or perhaps quotes N in co, you can compute its local observables. And what you will see, perhaps the following slide is the computation of that. It's basically what I told you about in the a few slides ago. So the local observables of two in co, for example, are just the algebra functions on the cotangent bundle, just like what you see in Rosensky-Witten, I guess, with the quantization coming from the symplectic structure. Giving it an E3 algebra structure. And that's what gives you the shiftification of over T star X. I'll just skip over to Langlands. In the case of Langlands, G-check mod G-check is a, in the case of local Langlands, G-check mod G-check is a smooth stack. And when you compute the cotangent bundle, you see the following. In a point in G-check mod G-check is a G-check bundle on S1, and the cotangent bundle at this point is basically it's just the global sections of an associated bundle to this this bundle, an associated local system associated to the adjoint representation. Inside there, you have a nilpotent subset, so nilpotent global sections, and then you can then define two in co n, just restricting to things supported on this n. So lastly, I managed to almost finish in 5 minutes since you. Okay, so last slide. You can do the same thing for three in co BG check. So when you compute local observables of trink of BG check, of BG check, you will see omega on the sphere space, on a sphere space of BG check. And there's a causal duality that lets you translate that into functions on a shifted cotangent bundle to BG check. So Now that thing happens to be, it's basically just functions on coaction orbits to G-check. So the conclusion to this whole thing is this theory, quotes three encode G-check, has an interesting algebra of local observables, which is this O of H shifted by 2 mod W. And this is, people may be familiar already with a similar result from in the work of Elliott and Yeo, where they do a similar computation in global landmass. So this is just an analog computation carried over in freely local landmass. And therefore, you can shiftify this free encode of BG-check over this space, H mod W, and finally define a free encode N of BG-check as the five as the subcategory of objects supported at zero. So and this N again is because the fiber of zero inside H mod W means the nilpotent cone in G mod G-check, and in the picture of three encode BG-check localizing on the cotangent bundle, this means exactly object supported on the nilpotent cone. Okay, so sorry, I've rushed through the last seven slides or so, but I wanted at least to give you an idea of how this N arises from kind of, again, taking support of actions of basically the center of this three category. Okay, so I'll stop here. Thanks.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, but I have like lots and lots of questions, so maybe.
I mean,
I want to ask them, but I just figured I'd let people get in a short question first.
I have a quick question, maybe, which is, you know, this appearance of G2 mod G-check, like, I mean, that's the space that gives you geometric satake, right? The satake category, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can I somehow easily see geometric satake in this picture?
So I think... So geometric satake, I guess, has to do with, so we've done here local observables. So geometric satake has to do with, what's the name, line operators. So quasi-co of this is what you see from geometric satake. And yes, so I guess, you won't see geometric. Okay, so I've told you just a story in the spectral side. So this won't prove for you geometric attack or anything like that. But certainly, if I take this discussion and I plug in S2, then you what you will see is not omega of this space, but int code of mapping space from S2 to X. And that's quasi-co on here. So you recover that. The fact that, I don't know, the value of your 4D theory on S2 is quasi-co on here, which is sort of, is related to geometric satake, but it's just happening on one side.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. Do you know some nice objects in these three categories? Example.
Yeah, so yeah, this is basically built so that consider the Borel, so BB check mapping to BG check. So you can push forward the structure shift of BB check to BG check, and this thing is basically done. This thing is basically defined so that object belongs here. Okay, so BB. Two in code BB check is an object here, and in fact it should be a generator. It's not. I haven't filled all the details of a proof of this being a generator, but it looks likely that it will be a generator of this.
then is there something like Neumann, something which would have a G?
Yeah, so I forget which one is Neumann and which one is Dirichlet here. So if you forget for a moment about N, certainly here you have two objects, one which is the structure shift of BG check, and one would, sorry?
Yes.
And one of which is the push forward from the point. So the structure shift of BG check has support zero. So it's certainly in here. The push forward from the point has maximal singular support, so it won't be here, but it's on the bigger thing, it's on 3 inco. And well, those two are Dirichlet and Neumann. I forget which one is which.
Can you build something from a representation of the quantum group at root of unity?
I can't. So I'm sure that would be a future direction here. So basically, one would like to understand the deformation theory of this, perhaps even three quasi co of BG check. And so BG check is a shift. So yeah, BG check is shifted symplectic. So three quasi co of BG check has a deformation coming from this shifted symplectic structure. And I think that should agree with quantum groups. But I haven't thought too much in that direction.
In a sense, I was wondering, because you know there should be a whole SL to Z of S dualities, of dualities, not just an S duality. So the...
Yeah, right, yeah. Here I'm just in the most basic duality here.
There's the version of geometric Satake that you were talking about before, like a sheafified version or the ultimate W.
Sorry, so can you say this again?
Like the geometric Satake statement I'm used to, I would have thought, is like the thing that you get when you take objects supported at zero and get like rep G check on one side or something.
Let's see. So
the appearance of the G shifted by two is.
Yeah, so I mean, so yeah, we were saying this. Certainly, this.
This,
how to say, so,
Satake. This yeah. is like the B side derived Satake
okay.
category.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. So I mean, again, so the categorification of this is the B side Satake category.
Yeah. So who's actually? So where is it proven the comparison between distributions on maps from an n-fold loop space and the quantas with its, you know, E3 structure? Like, I mean, like I've asked you this question before together, the comparison with the quantization of the symplectic form on the cotangent bundle.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's written anywhere, and really I really want to use perhaps the quantization more as a moral guideline. It's not necessary to have this precise statement really to run the story, but it should be true, but I don't know if it's written.
Because even for like the 2-shift or the 1-shift, it's pretty hard. It's like not obvious in either of those cases either.
Here perhaps you can take quantization here to mean whatever deformation you had on the other side. The fact that it agrees with the deformation coming from a shifted symplectic structure, I'm sure it should be true, but it looks probably non-trivial.
And then in the case where where you're doing local operators in 2-intco.
Yes.
And you said something, and so you put up very quickly on your slides, like the work of Dario, like on these, like.
Oh yeah, well, I should. I skipped so many things that I should have mentioned. Where is it? here. Yes. Yeah, so in the case, yeah, in the case n equals one, of course, the this categorified demodule structure is what he's been writing about for some time. And
and he doesn't even know in that case that his H linear structure is the same thing as the quantization of T star one.
Let's see. So, well, in that case, you're talking. I think you can do that. So, at least for schemes that say.
Yes.
So we are talking about Hochschild co-chains, right? And you're talking about what the bracket is on Hochschild cohomology, and you, if you do that computation, I think you will see. You will see the Poisson bracket coming from the cotangent bundle. So I think that okay, that goes in one direction. Like you prove that you have this E2 algebra. Its cohomology has a Poisson structure, which is the same Poisson structure you see coming from the cotangent bundle.
He has quote D modules, right? He has this quote D modules. Like, is it obvious that those are?
Right. So. So the quotes D module. Okay. So. So where does that come into play here? So that comes into play if you want to compute the center of H, I believe. And
I see. So that's
not quite the computation I'm doing here. I'm doing a very, very simple computation. So this is part of what I skipped, but the computation that's going on in this talk is really take H, take its monoidal units, and its endomorphisms is it's just the Hochschild co-chains on X.
But isn't there also like a C2 gradient problem about there's like a T star one versus a T star minus one, like in your theorem?
I guess when I wrote this key observation here, I think I shifted by two at some point things. The quantization that you see, I think it's perhaps this T star X shifted by N.
Yes, it is one, so that you've written T star minus one, but.
Yeah, so when it was one, I wrote T star shifted by minus one to just put minus one of the cotangent in degree zero. The algebra of differential, the quantization is the quantization of T star shifted by one, not minus one, but it's a difference, it's an even degree difference, so it's fine.
Well, like you have to like do something to fix it.
that's part of this key that I didn't explain. How do you get out to actually the simplification from the action? I mean, that's where you have to say that if you have an action of an algebra graded in even degrees, then you can find a support theory.
Satisfied?
I'm never satisfied. No, I mean, like, yeah, there's like lots of things that I'd like to know, but you don't have to be here. But you guys don't have to be here for it. Like, just things like the theory of like enriched infinity n categories, like that, like exist, like yeah.
I mean, I'm using enriched one category theory, really. No, I don't need to. really enriched. That's everything I need, because I'm not going to talk. I don't need to say the words lax for the story. So enriched one category theory is enough. And there's just, I believe there's just barely enough. Now that there's a Leonid embedding, and that's just turns out to be what you need to run the story.
Brunet's work.
Rune and there's also the paper by Hini. So the Ioneda embedding is in the paper of Hinich, but yeah, Rune and Gebner also is part of the story.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's enough to make me happy.
All right. Well, let's thank everyone again.